Welcome back to Maniacs, the official podcast of the West Virginia University Student Section. Well, that wasn't fun.
No, it was not.
Here with, lamenting about this. We're all here trying to find some positivity, looking forward, but I feel like we can find it here in this podcast today. But nonetheless, we're here with our regular group. Tyler Falstick.
Howdy.
Will Kent.
I'm back after my hiatus.
And of course, last, but certainly not least, Ty McClung.
Hi.
Yep. Those are the vibes today, starting out this podcast. And of course, my name is Brandon Nyswanger. And of course, what we're reflecting on is West Virginia University's blowout loss turned miraculous comeback turned last minute heartbreaking loss versus Houston last Thursday against WVU's former non-re-signed head coach, Daniel Holgorsen, and your 2021 Mountaineer starting lineup. So with the likes of Tony Mathis and eighth-year super senior Michael Laughlin kicking it off on the offense with the helps of some others.
They got Noah Guzman and, you know, Sam Brown.
Sam Brown, who was
a decent player.
Yeah, played well.
I think he leads the Big 12 in receiving yards this year, actually.
Put up more points against us than I think anybody else this year.
Yeah, more than Penn State. Mm-hmm. And that was with James Franklin running score to cover the spread.
I say, to be completely honest here, I think Houston might be a better offensively coached team than anybody else we've played this year.
I don't think so.
Who was better offensively coached than anybody that we've played this year?
You think
Pat Narduzzi is a better offensive coach than Dana Holgorsen?
He doesn't coach the offense.
I'm gonna agree with you, Brandon. You think
Penn State's offensively coached? You know, they were in the wishbone against us, Will.
But I don't know if it was just that their offense was that impressive or our defense was just that unimpressive.
Well, listen, let's not sugarcoat things. We played horribly in the first half.
We did. Oh, the first half was atrocious. We played better defensively the second half until that play that shall not be named.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a Hail Mary. I mean, like, I don't even want to reflect on that. What I'm more concerned about here is our defense in general way before this drive even began, before we took the lead, I hate to make excuses, but we saw how important Trey Lathan and AB were to this defense. Middle of the secondary be exposed.
Sure. I've had conflicting thoughts about the defense for the whole season. I didn't necessarily think that the scores of the games that they've been holding offenses to was completely reflective of the defensive unit. And I think those opinions, I mean, my opinion there kind of was proven correct to a certain extent. We kind of saw what we saw at Penn State in the second half come back here at Houston. You know, receivers running wide open, lots of space to roam, playing off the ball.
That's my big thing.
Playing off the ball and trying to prevent big plays and just allowing teams to methodically move the ball in the field. Because if we remember against Penn State, I think Drew Allar had a really big pass play, like their first possession for a 60-yard touchdown or so.
Yeah.
We extended the play. And then after that, for the most part, Penn State didn't have too many more big plays in the passing game. What seemed to be backbreaking, especially in the second half, was they would just be able to convert third down.
That's right. And let me cut you off real quick, Will. The worst defensive play didn't even truly happen on defense as much as it was on special teams. Allowing a kick return for a touchdown against a team that doesn't have as much talent as you is completely inexcusable in all preparation and all scheming. You have two guys in the open field with one guy, a ball carrier with no blockers. Well, it should be a tackle 100% of the time.
Sure.
Yeah, I think our special teams was something that we thought
Against Pitt.
I highlighted them last year. You know, last week, how good they were.
Special teams was something that we thought we were doing better than almost anybody in the country. Yeah. And we just, I don't want to say we got exposed because we did. But, I mean, that happens from time to time. Mm-hmm. But I think we just, it was uncharacteristic, you know. Mm-hmm. Ollie didn't punt well.
No.
Our punt defense was terrible.
Yes.
Our punt returns were not good. You know, we were missing wide open holes, it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still spoiled by the fact that we have a returner that can catch the ball right now. So
that's true.
I mean, for now, I mean, that might change on Saturday. Who knows? Good point. It's supposed to rain and be like 45 degrees, but nonetheless, although that type of weather does suit us well. But nonetheless,
so far this year,
I think the my second least favorite thing that happened in this game was our 14-point swing dropped touchdown pass in the end zone. I mean, that's inexcusable. I mean, there are people, if you're listening to this in the mountain layer, you could probably pick the person next to you and he can make that catch 9 out of 10 times. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, that was definitely, I mean, not just a swing in the game, like points wise, but that was such a huge momentum swing. You know, we were
finally started clicking.
We already had the lead. We were threatening to extend the lead. We were about to take, you know, what would have been like 11, I think, 11 point lead.
I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, a huge swing of things, which ended up with us going down 11 and then, you know, having to play comeback in the last, you know, 7 minutes of the game. You know, that's hard to do. I was impressed with the way the offense played on those two drives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they played great. And, you know, to be fair, to give some props to the defense, when Houston got the ball back with about a minute and a half, we forced a really nice-looking three and out. You know, the defense, right. We rushed enough. We were playing ready. But, you know, this game should have never have come down to a Hail Mary miracle play. We made too many mistakes on both sides, all three sides of the ball.
And that's right. And that's what when I see all this stuff on Twitter and things of that nature about what we should have done differently on the Hail Mary. You know, there are things that are definitely worth considering, like, you know, why certain people were in certain positions and why we had certain people on the field and stuff. Like, yeah, that's, I mean, all fair criticisms, but it's not the criticisms that ought to be had. There are bigger criticisms out there, like, why were we in a position against a team that doesn't have a winning record to throw a Hail Mary to win, right? After we had to crawl back and convert a 4th and 10 to take the lead, right? These are the questions and criticisms that ought to be had. But, you know, it's college football.
Sure.
We have already exceeded our win total on the year.
You know
that people projected us.
It was 4.5, so we gotta get one more to solidify that.
When you know the Hail Mary happened, you know, and they were saying like anything can happen. I don't know about you all. I got flashbacks to the days of playing NCAA 14, where Chris Fowler's voice was saying, you know, this is college football, and anything can happen. So you know, it was bad memories right there.
That's right.
Extremely, extremely frustrating road trip to Texas for the team. And, you know, I guess we can get into a little bit about this upcoming week's matchup versus Oklahoma State Cowboys. The most important aspect is you cannot let that game dictate the rest of your season. You know, Oklahoma State is a team that's kind of seen to figure some things out as of late. Mm-hmm. You know, they were 2-3. Now they're 2-2. I think now they're 4-2. They've been running the ball pretty well. They have another great Canadian running back following in the lineage of Chuba Hubbard and superstar Jalen Warren. But they you know, Mike Gundy has well coached teams, and it's going to be a battle. It always usually is at Oklahoma State. It's usually last year at Oklahoma State, funny enough, really bad weather and rain. And we saw the Mountaineers kind of.
It seems to be the key to us beating Oklahoma State is rain and the cold.
And then last time I played at home, I believe in 2021, very close game, kind of similar, eerily similar circumstances.
Well, till the end.
To what we're at
till
now.
Late. I mean, it ended up 21.
With the Mountaineers being in the position they are.
Well, that's true.
In 2021, I believe that was after they had won two in a row because they, I believe, and kind of got the momentum going. And Oklahoma State came in a game which DeVue had a chance to win and just laid an egg. So you're hoping that doesn't happen again.
You know, Will,
it's just going to be tough to rebound, and I think how you respond early is going to be key because what we saw, I thought, on Thursday was kind of the same old story we've seen for the last 4 years kind of creep back in. And, you know, we can't afford to start a game at home like we did, say, against some Texas Tech in 21, where we came out completely unprepared and fell down 17-0 in the first half, then tied the game up and lost. That's true. So it's just going to be important. You know, it's just going to be important to get off to.
I don't even know, get off to a quick start.
Now, Will,
typical of the last few years, I think that was just, you know, typical of Mountaineer football. You know, especially with games coming off of bye weeks, and you know the midseason bye week. I like at times. I really hate at times. You know, it's unpredictable.
It's how you attack it.
Right. You don't know. You never know how you're going to respond. And, you know, Coach Brown in his, you know, weekly press conference on Monday admitted that, you know, he didn't attack it the way he probably should have. Right. And, you know, and I don't know, like hindsight's 20/20, and, you know, we can complain all we want to, but like at the end of the day, he owned up to it, but we still want results. Like,
he said that, you know, he gave the guys too much leniency, thinking that they were more mature than what they were with all of our injuries and things of that nature. But it is funny because if he does the opposite and is, you know, going tough on these guys and, you know, we're an injured, battered team that's gritted it out a couple of times, and then we come out slow and tired and sloppy, well, then all of a sudden in his weekly presser, he's going to have to say, well, we went too tough during a bye week. And instead of all of our fans saying, you know, why the heck were we going easy on our players during practice, they're all going to be saying, why the heck are we going so hard on our guys on practice?
You can never make everyone happy.
I know.
It's just
you
the way.
You can't make the haters happy. They're going to find the side of the coin they want to find.
We're just always extremely hypercritical when it comes to losing
football. You think?
Games.
You
After
think?
Every single loss we go.
Listen, Tyler.
It's kind of embarrassing a little bit, but at the same time, it's just
passion.
It's just college
I'm
football.
Glad people care, but hold on a second. I want to say something right now. If you are going 4-2, right? If you're 4-2, sitting before your home game, when you were projected to go 4-8 by every single piece of national media, some 3-9. You are off the hot seat in every rational person's mind. Will started opening his mouth. That's why I threw in rational. Right?
If you're in four and two
when you were projected to go 4-8, and two of those wins were against your biggest rival that you've played for over 100 years, and the other one was a 13-point underdog story on the road against TCU, who was in the national championship last year. You're a coach of the year candidate.
I do think he'll. I mean, if we can.
Go ahead, Will. Let's hear it.
If we pull out an 8 or 9 I'd like to start this season, I think he will be Big 12 coach of the year.
No, go ahead, Will. Come on, Will.
Yeah, I just think, you know, we've shown this team and program has shown what it is over the last 4 years and repeated the same mistakes Thursday. And at this point, you know, we know who we are. And I just hope we can win eight or nine games this year.
So,
but, you know, I'm a little bit more pessimistic.
So, you guys. So when you mean shown our true colors, why don't we count the 4 games that we won, but count the 1 game that we lost that we shouldn't have?
Some of those, the teams we beat were bad.
But we weren't favored. We did better than people anticipated. We're exceeding expectations.
I agree.
We are. So and far. Listen, at the end of the day, we can all agree that we had no business losing that game. We lost.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bad loss. It happens. But at the same time, we're 4-2. We're 2 wins away from bowl eligibility. Mm-hmm. We're sitting third in a really good football conference, in a pretty good football conference this year.
Good backtrack.
But, you know, I think we're in a good spot overall. And as much as this one hurts, I mean, it really hurt when I was watching SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt.
I don't know how you had the courage to turn on ESPN
and
after
the
that.
Number one, you know, bad beat for the week was West Virginia losing Jack to Houston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that one, you know, that it hurts. But guess what? Like Coach Brown said, you know, it's time to move the page. Let's stop talking about this one. We're not going to forget about it. It's still going to be there in our minds, but we don't have to keep acting like it was the end of the world for one loss. Right. It's time to move the page.
So,
you know,
Colorado's done this a couple of times. Do they suck now, Will?
Well, they won one game.
Well, yeah, they're not. I don't think they
are. Yeah, they're exceeding expectations.
Yeah, but that's a whole different situation.
Is it? Their NIL funds massive. They have one of, if not the greatest football player ever, recruiting some of the best football talent in the nation. It's not this year versus last year type of mentality anymore. It's how much talent do you have and what are you doing?
I mean, I suppose we can agree to disagree.
Well, I'd like to tell you, or have you tell me how I'm wrong.
About what?
About how the college football landscape is about comparing last year to this year and not comparing.
Oh, it's still indicative of a whole body of work from a program. This is the first year that Deion Sanders has been at Colorado.
It's not even the same program.
This is the fifth.
It's not even the same program. Yeah. They had 20,000 people at games last year. Now they're hundreds of dollars for tickets.
They're estimated like, I think it's like $15 million into the Colorado economy for every single game that gets right. home game that gets played there. It's insane what
he's the difference. They have an entirely different lineup. You know, we don't.
Peyton Manning was at the game last week. Like, you don't see that stuff at any other college when it comes to just bringing in people purely for the team and for the coach.
In Peyton's defense, it was probably a little more entertaining than going to watch his Broncos and my Broncos play on Sunday, but we don't have to talk about that.
He's a Colt. Don't worry about it.
Don't even get me. All right. You know what? Like Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band, we're going to turn the page and preview Oklahoma State a little bit.
We just get a classic rewind style reference here on this podcast. That's rough. We've reached a new low. You thought the Hail Mary was bad. This was terrible.
Nah, listen, when you grow up with my father riding through the back roads of West Virginia and you get Sirius XM, you get five stations. Classic Rewind's one of them. So you get a lot of classic vinyl there, guys. No,
that's incredible.
Big game Saturday, as we've talked about. You know, I think I'll go a little bit away from the norm here. And I think, you know, on Saturday, we need to throw the football.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I think
the ball Thursday as much as we can, as much as it permits within the game plan and within whatever, whether it's going to be bad or not.
You know, Will, I hate to agree with you, but I will.
But, you know, I kind of think I might have said, I don't know if this is on the podcast, but I said this to someone about the Houston game. And I said, you know, I think Houston would have been a good chance to get the passing game going. And, you know, one of the few positives, I would say, or one of the main positives from the game, everyone can agree on, is that we did seem to kind of find something there, throwing the ball.
Certainly.
You know, we moved the ball down the field in big chunks. We saw receivers make plays. I think Devin Carter had like five catches for 116 yards.
Yep.
Garrett Green had close to 400 passing yards, two touchdowns. He added in 50 rushing yards and two on the ground as well. And we saw Cole Taylor looking like Jesse James, the 6'8 tight end.
Cole Taylor is so good and so underutilized.
Yeah.
Huddy Tuddy doing his thing. You know, the big play. He's a big play machine. So I think, you know, if we can build off that in offense, that's just going to continue to open up that run game, which we saw early in the game. I thought, you know, they did a great job running the ball up the middle. And as the game went on, they kind of did not do that as effectively. We saw the same issues that we struggled with, I think, against TCU, trying to run the ball up the middle with CJ, came back once again. But I think, you know, if we can keep that passing game clicking, let Garrett continue to build on the confidence, let Devin Carter continue to build off a big game. You know, that was what we brought him here for from NC State, for that all that Power 5 experience, is to replace what we lost from Bryce Ford Wheaton. And that was the first game. I mean, he had a good game against Penn State, but you can say Devin Carter impacted the game very much on Thursday.
Yeah,
I think, you know,
he played well.
If we keep the passing game going, I think that could take some pressure off the defense if we can score more points.
I'm also excited to see E.J. Horton, I think, stepped up in a big way Thursday. You know, he made some big plays. He also had a really underrated catch at TCU, and he took a shot.
Well, so
to the upper, you know, the head neck region that wasn't called, but I mean, he held on to that ball, and that was a huge first.
Was that Houston Certainly. The first game he was out of his shoulder brace?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
because he suffered that shoulder injury right at the end of fall camp, which is disappointing. Because I know, you know, they talked about him as being a key contributor, and you can see it with his speed and agility. So, you know, yeah, just get those guys, keep working them in, you know, keep the momentum going passing, and that'll allow us to play our game in the second half, which is, you know, grinding away.
I agree, Will, and quite honestly, and this is hard for me to say out loud, but I'd like to throw the ball a lot. You know, Garrett seems to actually be progressing, which was a main criticism of this administration, is to not be able to develop talent. But, you know, you've seen Garrett Green go from throwing the ball like he's a shortstop to throwing the ball like Steve Young. So, I mean, he was throwing some nukes against Houston, some well-timed deep balls, too.
And I think the talent's always been there. He was an Elite 11 finalist coming out of high school.
The talent's always
there.
They just
needed to find a
just
way
needed
to
develop.
They needed to get some continuity and give him a chance to be able to make mistakes. You know, in the past, you know, when he would come in for Diggy, he would only be in for a drive, and there wasn't much of a chance to establish some continuity.
Right, and a lot of those were like spread plays, too.
And like this year, you know, clearly they've opened it up completely for him and let him kind of do his thing. And I think, better than people would have expected.
Oh, yeah.
He's done better than what I expected.
He's proved to the fan base that he can throw the ball. You know, a lot of people were, especially in the offseason, you know, the first few weeks were criticizing, you know, his throwing capabilities. I mean, if you watch that game Thursday like I did, you saw a good quarterback, you know.
Yeah.
Interception was unfortunate. Not his fault, you know. He stays in the pocket. Like, he extends plays in the pocket, but he can also get out of the pocket and run.
And it's Garrett's only turover of the entire season, correct?
Well, yeah.
The
that was the first pick.
First turnover in general.
Yeah. No, Garrett, I mean, has thrown a couple balls that probably should have been picked, but so does everybody.
Yeah.
Right? That's the criticism people say that. It's like, oh, well, you know, he has three interceptions that aren't showing up on stat sheets. Well, it just doesn't matter. Right, I mean, how many?
If it doesn't show up on the stat sheet, it doesn't count.
I mean, interceptions did we drop last week?
Yeah, hey, listen,
I
mean, close only counts
into account too.
Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. I mean, it does.
Yeah, hit all the references here tonight, aren't you?
I mean, I'm a truth teller.
Incredible! I can't believe that we got two time o'clock. sayings, proverbs, whatever you want to call them.
Oh, I like proverbs. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. You can only call it a proverb if you mention that you're from Boone County, right? Boone County proverb. How about that? Write that down, Ty. I think that's awesome.
We need to make that a weekly segment. The Boone County proverb.
I like the Boone County proverb. I do. Yeah. I'm a fan.
Maybe we'll get some of that later. I think looking forward to this game, the most important thing is that we win. Yeah. we just need to avoid disaster. Like, it's not just the fan base. The wheels are coming off the bus. This game is such,
I don't even want to say it's a trap game, but Oklahoma State is that team every year in the Big 12.
They're good, but they're so unpredictable.
I don't think they're good. Because you don't know what team's going
to
show up.
Wait, they lost to Wyoming,
South Alabama. That's what I meant.
Wyoming's pretty all right, but South Alabama was rough. You know,
they get killed by South Alabama at home. The next week, they lose a one score game at Iowa State. Who is, you know, better than people?
And just remember that there are people who want Mike Gundy fired for the season.
But I mean,
which is hilarious.
Criminal. So they went on a bye week, and then the last 2 weeks they have beat back to back ranked teams. Granted, it was Kansas State and Kansas, but you know, Kansas it's
granted good. They're good.
They're good teams. I mean, like these were games. Kansas had a lead in that game. Kansas State had a lead in that game. These are both comeback wins.
I remember Kansas.
Granted, both of them were at home.
Mm-hmm.
So the last time this team was truly on the road was a loss at Iowa State. We really just don't know what team's gonna, show up for each.
Either team, yeah.
We don't know if the Oklahoma State team before the bye week's going to show up or the team that's trending right now. We don't know if the Mountaineers from 3 weeks ago are going to show up.
Or
the Mountaineers from Thursday are going to show up.
You know, honestly, as long as it's the third quarter Mountaineers that show up on Saturday, I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
You know, let's throw for 800 passing yards and, you know, win a game 72-60. It'd be awesome.
I'm in the mood for an old style Big 12 shootout, you know.
Yeah, although I say that now until it starts happening. I'm like, what's going on?
Listen, as long as we're on the winning end of a Big 12 shootout this time, I'm all for it.
Yeah, it hasn't happened in a while. Definitely hasn't happened like ever versus Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State.
You know, I do want to say, you know, the first time we ever played Oklahoma State at home, we were about 20-point underdogs to the 11th-ranked Cowboys in 2013. The first ever gold rush.
That's right.
The legend of Clint Trickett
that
was born.
That wasn't the first gold rush.
Well, the first gold rush for Holgorsen it was.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it was, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, first in the Big 12 because the LSU game. But, you know, the legend of Clint Trickett, you know, with his shoulder. Yeah, his hurt shoulder.
Jordy, his hurt everything.
Jordy Thompson, that's really a pretty big catch.
Jordan Thompson. Game. Yeah, Charles Sims breaking off. Kevin White had his first touchdown.
Kevin White.
Ishmael Banks.
You know, you want to talk about
with
underrated.
34-yard pick six.
Kevin White was my goat when I was younger. I mean, you want to talk about being blessed with wide receivers. We went from Noel Devine era to Tavon era straight into Kevin White. I mean, that was legendary.
We had David Sills right after that.
That's right. Sills although, I mean, Kevin White was just something. I mean, he was just underrated. Like, there are people that, you know, 18 years old right now don't know who he is.
That's why he's a top. I think he was he eighth overall? Was that what it was?
Yeah, he was top 10.
Yeah, to the Bears, you know, had he not got hurt, the Bears, he'd,
That's right. Well, had he not gotten drafted by the Bears, then he probably would have succeeded.
Yeah, West Virginia, you know, our players, when we do get a really high draft pick, we get the unfortunate. They get drafted to bad teams.
Miami, the Jets again. You know,
Bears, Carl Joseph.
Carl Joseph going to the Raiders.
He did. And then the Browns.
The Steelers practice squad for a little bit.
Carl did a good job for himself in
Las
Vegas.
The worst thing that ever happened to Carl Joseph was people
tearing his ACL.
Well, okay.
Also, the rules changed, so he couldn't spear everybody.
Not being able to get his medical redshirt his senior year.
That, I mean, you would have
the NCAA. He didn't really need it. He got drafted top 15.
Well, yeah, but I really...
You want to talk about...
Had we had him on that 2016 defense, we probably would have won the Big 12 and...
Incredible.
We'd have won 11 games.
One of my favorite players to ever play for WVU.
Oh, Carl Joseph, absolutely. When the Steelers signed him, I think Will thought about buying a jersey for a little bit, didn't you?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, there's some serious love for Mr. Joseph out there.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
I think I cried when I found out he tore his ACL.
I remember where I was. I was driving past Cabela's in Wheeling, West Virginia. I just remember reading it and telling my dad and him being in complete disbelief.
My grandpa and I went to that Oklahoma State game, which we lost in overtime.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see him. I got to go, you know, meet some of the players at the Pushcar Center after the game. Oh. And you see him walking out on crutches and everything. And, you know, like, oh, you know, like, hey, Carl Joseph, you know, how you doing? Hope you get better. And he's like, oh, thanks, man. And, you know, you realized right then after that game. Speaking of that, you know, we've had this series with Oklahoma State has been a little one-sided. You know, they've had our number a few times, but there's also been some memorable games. You know, that 2015 home game, down 17-2 at half, or maybe it was 19-2, I think. Come back, tie it, lose in overtime in a shootout because we dropped a touchdown pass on fourth and goal.
Right.
You know, 2013 and 2014, we go back-to-back wins against the Cowboys.
Uh-huh.
Then we didn't win again until last season. You know, a couple of them probably should have won. We're not going to talk about 2018 because it's only going to make me mad.
That game developed some...
Let's change the topic.
That game developed some personal vendettas that I will hold against certain individuals responsible for that game for the rest of my life. And nothing ever, ever, ever can get rid of it. That game is worse than being on the plane with Rich Rod, the first person on the plane with his coffee ready to go, if you were responsible for that.
You know, I feel like that was directed towards an unnamed defensive coordinator from the hills of Boone County, but we don't have to talk about him because he's not doing much right now at NC State, but, you know. So let's move into a little bit of talk about college football in general, because there are a lot of good games this past weekend. And I just want to hear what you guys have to say about it.
Yeah, it sucks that my national champion went down in flames this weekend in South Bend. You know, the fighting Caleb Williams couldn't get the job done.
Hey. Well, we told you they weren't that good, but you didn't want to listen.
Yeah, shocker. Will being wrong. Who would have predicted
my
that?
My Heisman pick. played a pretty dang good game against the USC Trojans.
He did. Sam Hartman.
He only threw for 126. Well. But
that's incredible.
He was 13 for 20, had two TDs. I mean, you really can't complain.
You're not actually saying this seriously, are you?
No. I've given up on Sam Hartman. I'm going to be completely honest. It was a horrible pick from the beginning. I regret it, but hey, who knows? They might win out and find a way into the playoffs.
College football proved to me was last week when Gunnar was saying, yeah, you don't know anything about college football this year. We don't know. And, this week literally proved it right.
That internalized it all.
Notre Dame, who was destroyed by Louisville, go on to destroy USC. And speaking of Louisville, they lost to Pitt.
Oh, that was pretty predictable. I mean,
yeah.
You just don't know how good these
teams
are.
They unleashed the monster. 46,000 people ready to cheer them on. Not sure if you all saw that. They reported 46,000 in attendance.
There's going to be more people at the Joan Thursday than there were at Pitt's home game Saturday.
People are allowed to go into the Joan? I thought they just shut it off.
They tarp half of it off, so.
Well, listen, they got to, that's just.
Standing room only for bad purposes
only. It has to look nice so Jim can keep giving them their money so they can keep the university open.
Big Game Boomer's got to have, Big Game Boomer has to go to the best environment in the state this week.
That's right. That's why he's going to West Liberty.
You're right.
Classic college football traditions.
Yeah, home of the
whole
best
nation.
College football tradition ever.
Big Game Boomer's coming to the Mountain State Derby?
No, he's going, yeah. I wish he was.
Actually, I'm glad he's not. He can stay away. I'm not a big fan of his.
Is really anybody, I don't think he actually has fans.
Well, Pitt and Marshall fans are, which is probably the leading reason why I'm not a big fan of his.
Pitt and Marshall fans? I didn't know they actually had fans. I thought they just had Twitter bots.
He just knows that we have a great Twitter, and he trashes us so he can get his Twitter views up, engagements up. And he does that every single week. It doesn't matter who we're playing. It doesn't matter what happens at home. If Marshall's got a home game, they're supposedly a better home experience or atmosphere at home, according to him. So anything that comes out of his mouth is a bunch of trash, and you shouldn't listen to it.
You know, here's the thing. If you want to claim that you're the best environment in the state, I recommend that you beat your big brother. And you actually sell out. Just once. You know, that would stop us from talking. Or maybe actually sell out your stadium when you claim it's a sellout. Math is not that hard. I know our public school system isn't the best here in the state of West Virginia.
Math is kind of hard here.
It is for the people in Huntington, apparently, for that administration. But that's a different topic. We got a great slate of games Thursday. Not only do we have the infamous third Saturday in October rivalry taking place in Tuscaloosa.
Yes.
But we have probably the Big Ten, one of the Big Ten games of the year. This is actually going to be a really good game. You got the Nittany Lions taking on the worthless Nuts, who are even bigger frauds.
Ohio State's going to expose Penn State this week and beat them by a couple of touchdowns.
Penn State sucks.
But Ohio State does too. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think Penn State's going to win that game.
Yeah, I can't believe you're saying it either.
There's an asterisk on this week in college football. Colorado's not playing. They're on their bye week, which is...
So what's ESPN going to post?
That's true, actually.
It's a shame, you know.
Shows the price to losing to the bottom of a non-existent conference.
The game was rigged last Friday night. Those of you in Boulder know it was rigged. They just don't want to see Deion succeed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
let them come back from a 29-0.
Yeah, that's
deficit.
Right. That's Will's take of the year. Nobody in control of football right now wants to see Colorado succeed. That's so true. ESPN doesn't want Colorado to succeed.
Last year's take was that the SEC was getting three teams in the playoff. This year, it's that, you know, the nature of college football is working against
the
Buffaloes.
Remember that every single year except this year, Wills thinks that the SEC has been underrated in polls.
That's true.
Georgia's a little underrated.
I do think that.
So is Alabama.
Aren't they number one?
Yeah, but
what do you want them to be, Will?
He's right on the fact that Alabama's a little underrated. You know,
they should not be out of the top 10.
Georgia's more underrated than Alabama. In between 11 and 13 past few weeks.
And winning that Bama's tough game versus Arkansas actually makes me respect
That was
Alabama.
A good game. Jalen Milroe
Arkansas is good.
They played
three out of the four teams probably going to make it into the playoffs.
Alabama's next two games are both at home. they have an advantage. I mean, that's an advantage in and of itself. But you've got, you know, Tennessee. You've got rematches.
2-6. It's week 8.
Your next two games are rematches against your two losses last year in Tennessee and LSU back to back.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a two-game gauntlet to begin with.
That's
right. Especially with the way, you know, normally I wouldn't say that about Tennessee, but, you know, the last few years, they
I'm an SEC hater.
Yeah, they've proved me wrong, but they're playing well. And, you know, you never can count out LSU because, like I said about Oklahoma State, you don't know what team's going to show
up. That's right.
Last year, I thought Alabama was going to handle them. And they lost in a double overtime.
Maybe yeah, we've just Tennessee's learned to either, do whatever so. You don't.
Oh, yeah, man. Pretty much.
That's right. Anyway, I have a nice bold take this week.
Ooh, okay.
That I think you're going to like a lot, Ty.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, I know this kind of goes against the grain here with the bold takes, especially picking a game that is kind of a toss-up already. But I'll give you a prediction on the winning margin to make it bold.
Okay.
I think your newly crowned FBS ranked, soon to be ranked, JMU.
The Dukes.
Beats Marshall in the Joan by more than 10.
Oh, yeah.
A former FCS school.
Yeah. I mean, right. That's the best bold take you've had all year.
I'd love to say, well, actually, the best bold take I had all year was week one when it hit.
Well, it's going to hit this week too, you know.
That follows my rule. That follows the 10-point margin that I always roll with. Is that I need to pick 10 points against against the book, and that's what I do. I mean, I think it's going to be a blowout. If I had to pick 20 points against the margin, I picked them to win by 20.
Right. I mean, right now their JMU is a 3.5-point favorite. JMU's defense is playing extremely well. When you look at Marshall's quarterback, Cam Fancher, you know, he's thrown for over 1,500 yards and 7 touchdowns. People forget he's also thrown 5 interceptions.
I'm a believer when they're playing Marshall.
With a lot, yeah. I've rooted for every team that Marshall has ever played except for Pitt and Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
And that was when abstained. Lose? Yeah. Like I just abstained.
Bring back ties.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing for me. If there are 1,000 people on this earth that think JMU is going to blow out Marshall, I'm one of them. If there's 10, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
If there's one, I'm one of them.
Right.
If there are none, I'm somewhere else, buddy. Because this is going to happen. JMU is going to own Marshall and the Joan.
Oh, yeah.
It's him big game boomer home crying. You know, he can keep his home field apparel. I don't care. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Go be a Marshall. I don't like him.
Well, you know, that JMU offense is rolling. Jordan McLeod's got 14 touchdowns compared to only 3 turnovers on the entire year. JMU 6-0. And, you know, I think that the entire, the NCAA, these FBS teams, I hate this rule about, you know, you come in, you got to serve your years. Basically probation, you know, you can't go to a bowl game. I mean, they're clear as day going to win the Sun Belt East. I think they've actually already clinched the Sun Belt East.
Well, they won the Sun Belt last year.
Yeah, they won it last year, too. And they're not going to be able to play in a bowl game. And that's a big problem with college football in general.
Yeah, one of them.
Think that we're going to win.
You know, I think Marshall has another pretty important matchup this week in another sport. Since you are our resident soccer expert.
I suppose.
Get to say a little bit, you know, the podcast will be coming out, I believe, after the game. But, you know, just to close things out, I figure we should let Ty, you know, say a few things
about
the Mountain State Derby.
Look Darby. Who's coming to town. At the time of this recording, it is currently Tuesday night, a little less than 23 hours to go until the Mountain State Derby. Chris Grassy and the blundering turds of Marshall University roll into town, sporting a perfect 11-0-0 record. But that first blemish is going to come at the hands of the Mountaineers. Yataro Sukata, Marcus Caldera, Max Broughton, and Jackson Lee, and the rest of the years. We're ready. Tomorrow is Derby Day, ladies and gentlemen. We need you. Dick DeLess Soccer Stadium, with the power of the gold rush behind it, is going to send the herd home crying. Country roads are going to take them back home to the dump that they call home, while we will splendor in the glorious victory of the Mountain State Derby.
I can just imagine Ty saying this over and over and over again in front of the mirror.
That was well said. It feels like it was
practiced. I think it was practiced.
Oh, it definitely was.
Yeah, there's no way that could, like I can see you, like,
you know,
just in the morning, like, you know, combing the your number three clipper hair and being like, the blundering turd of Marshall.
You know, I'm not as great of an orator as the late great Bill Stewart. You know, I can't come up with
the
leave no doubt. You know,
well, neither could he. I think it was an Al Pacino speech, but he delivered it better.
He did.
Any given Sunday.
But guess what?
Any given Sunday.
It's like any given Wednesday night.
Yeah. The herd ain't gonna know what hit him.
That's right.
Because they shouldn't have played the old Golden Blue.
They shouldn't.
Not this night.
Not this night.
I really hope this doesn't end up on All Time Cold Takes. Because
well,
you know what?
The good thing is,
even if it does, guess what?
You can edit this out.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. It don't matter.
I'll edit after the game's played.
Because guess what happens?
We'll figure it out.
Regardless of the result this year, you know, they can claim their NBA bubble national championship all they want. They still have a losing record to Big Brother. So it doesn't matter. I mean, and guess who beat them in the NBA bubble 2020 national championship year? The West Virginia Mountaineers.
And it wasn't a cupcake either.
The last time we had a gold rush in Morgantown, the last time the herd came to Morgantown, we sent them packing. And we're going to do the same thing tomorrow night.
We're the fifth ranked team in the nation currently. Yeah. So
I love the enthusiasm.
People in the college soccer world say that college soccer has, you know, been running through Huntington the last few years. I want to know where they've been, because it runs through Morgantown, West Virginia. It's going to run through Morgantown tomorrow night, and we're going to show them why.
Defend Alesk.
Defend Alesk. Be loud, Dick, be baby. Proud. And
Incredible. Dick's Army.
Yes, sir.
A pretty good, I think, closing message that we kept the podcast or the whole show tonight. That embodies all of our feelings about, you know, how.
What, focus on soccer?
Yeah.
I agree.
Focus on football.
Let's focus
yeah.
On, focus
we're on we're a football school.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But nonetheless, I'm also very excited for the Derby here. You know, Coach Stratt is awesome. You know, I mean, he's actually the real deal. And, you know, I'm really excited to see what he draws up for Wednesday. And of course, this is a retroactively mentioned thing. I mean, since this podcast will be recorded or published on Friday, we're recording it on
really
Tuesday.
Hope this goes well
right.
For me.
Let's just say we hope that you all hear this part of the podcast. Right? nonetheless, I think that wraps things up for us. Let's go.
Mountaineers.
Cue it.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place. In my eye, country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, mountain mama, take me home, country roads. I hear her voice in the morning. Yesterday, yesterday.